Hi, it's Tony Brisky from Real Ghost Stories Online. Every single day, Jenny and myself do our best to try and create the best possible show for you. But it's not free to do that. We have a lot of hard costs on this end to distribute the show, produce the show, and put it out there for you. So we ask for your help by becoming an EPP, an extra podcast person. We're doing our best to make it worth your while by giving you a bonus episode every single week with some of the best stories we can find. Also, exclusive video content, including our new monthly video feature, Seeing Ghosts, where we examine some of the best ghost photos and discuss them that we get into the show here at Real Ghost Stories Online. All I ask is that if you listen to the show on a regular basis, please consider helping support keeping it on the air. It's only $5 a month, or sign up for a full year at a time and get 1 month free. If you already are an APP, thank you very much. If you're not yet, please consider supporting a show that you enjoy so we can continue creating it for you. Sign up at realghoststoriesonline.com, click become an EPP, and thank you.
Welcome to Real Ghost Stories Online. Call in your real ghost story now at 855-853-4802 or write in at realghoststoriesonline.com. You're about to enter the world of the unknown and quite possibly the undead. This is Real Ghost Stories Online.
That indeed it is, and on today's episode, two teens find the tragic stories about a historic hotel may actually be true. The urban legend about a bridge in Illinois may not be true, but there is definitely something evil there. A subway ride to work is even more uncomfortable for a passenger when a strange man seemingly vanishes. And could a listener be holding a memory of her past life or past death? Like that wasn't that good.
Or
past death. The stories you call some more today on Real Ghost Stories Online.
That's pretty good.
I like that little creepy.
You're creepy so well.
Creepy laugh. Mm-hmm. Remember when I was in elementary school in my second grade, I think, and the principal came in to watch us for a little bit because our main teacher had to go do something, and he was kind of a weird guy. I don't really know how any other way to describe him, but kind of intimidating, kind of weird for an elementary school. Not like super, hey, I'm your friendly principal. He was kind of a scary one.
Especially for little kids.
Yeah. I always felt very uncomfortable around him. But I remember he was walking up and down the aisles, like pacing almost, like just like, and then like, you know, looking down at what all the kids were doing on their desk and just very slow and methodical about it. And then when he got to me, I just looked straight up at him and then he just stared down at me. And I laughed this laugh, and it was, and I did it for a good, I don't know, 10, 15 seconds. I don't know how, because it takes a lot of air to do that laugh.
Yeah.
But it was like a good long one. And then he's like, my, what an evil laugh you have.
Wow.
Thank you. It's at the Christian elementary school, by the way.
Probably the only thing that's stuck with you from elementary school.
That and Sea Spot Run.
Mm-hmm.
Something about that. Yeah. It was a good time there. It's like, my, what an evil laugh you have. And it's the only thing he ever said to me the whole time I was in that school. I was not a troublemaker or anything like that. So I was never really interacting that much, but I don't know. It wasn't that big of a school either. It's like one of those things where it's like, yeah, a little more hands on would have, you know, helped a little bit, but anyway. That's good times right there. Our phone number, 855-853-4802. Of course, you can also write it on the website, realghoststoriesonline.com. I got something on Facebook from the gentleman who wrote into us a little while back about one of my favorite haunted locations, the old Retlaw Hotel in my hometown in Wisconsin. And remember he gave us that story a while back where he investigated there?
Was that Jesse?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And you're great with names.
I
don't remember anything.
That's why we do this.
I remember a story. I just don't know names. But yeah, Jesse wrote in because there were some things that he wrote about in the letter that I said, yeah, that's an urban legend. But he wanted to just correct himself on that. So here, I'll just read what he wrote here. Thought you might like this. I called in about my experiences a couple months back in an episode called Night of Hell, which was broadcast on September 1st. Wow, was that far back? But a hotel I referenced as the Ramada Inn, although it was called that during his investigation, which it was. It was that for a long time. Maybe you recall my story. Yes, I do. I touched on specific topics about a rumor that a newlywed couple hang themselves in the center of the ballroom, in which you said weren't aware of any haunting in the ballroom. I explained my experiences not as by one specific experience, but as a series of paranormal events happening all in one night. Let it be known that when I made my initial call and I was going off things that were passed down, I should have done more research about the hotel before calling in, but I assure you that everything I mentioned that happened to me in my group were in fact 100% true. So that's cool.
Oh, yeah. That happens all the time.
Yeah. I didn't doubt, you know, what he was saying was true by any means of what he experienced. It's just when you start getting, you know, the urban legends mixed in there, it can get kind of confusing, you know, for someone who's not, doing the investigation.
But regardless, it's definitely a haunted hotel, and he definitely had an experience there.
Yeah, it was a great episode, so go check that one out. And if you have more, he just sent me a message the other day saying that he was at the Dells, Wisconsin Dells, at a hotel under construction, and he'd let me know if there was anything that happened there. So I would love to hear if anything does happen there. He also sent me a link to a very interesting article recounting tons of haunted experiences from the hotel that was put together by WPRS, which I have to remember what that stands for, Wisconsin Paranormal something. I'll look
Research
it up.
Research Society.
Research Society. I think that's probably right. Anyway, it's a really interesting article, and if we have some time at the end of the show, I'll read you some of the accounts from their investigation that they did, and this is up on their website. Their website is WPRS.net if you want to see it. And they actually took some really interesting photos inside of the hotel. The most compelling one to me is inside the ballroom, which I actually DJ'd many a weddings at. It's a really nice ballroom. I mean, really, in that city, it was probably the nicest venue for a long period of time. The hotel is now closed down, by the way. But at the time, it was many a very high-class wedding done there. The ballroom photo, there's two taken pretty close to each other. You can tell it's like snap. And you can even see in the time line, it was like literally about a second apart. Bunch of chairs taken in the dark with a table. And then behind one of the chairs looks like there's a head popping up. And then the next shot, nothing.
Oh, wow.
It's creepy.
I bet.
It's on their site, which is WPRS.net. Just look up Retlaw is what it would be under, I'm sure. And then there's several others as well. They try to compare the shape of the head, and this I think might be a little too adventurous, to that of Walter Schroeder, which is Retlaw in reverse, the original builder of the hotel, which is the rumor of who's haunting it, and that can be argued too. There might be a stretch saying that it's Walter, but they found an old photo of Walter and then put it side by side, like, okay, I guess.
Kind of looks like him.
Kind of. Mm-hmm. I mean, kind of. And they're very stressfully kind of, but there is something there.
Sure.
I mean, that's more important than I think who it is in this photo, because I think it's going to be nearly impossible to identify, but there's definitely something there. Some orb photos. Anyway, it's interesting stuff. And if we have time later in the show, I'll talk about it. If not, I'll read about their investigation on a future episode of the little program that we do here every day. let's go to our first letter of the day. It comes into us from Bell writes in, good evening, Tony and Jenny. This is Bell from Norfolk, Virginia. Again, writing to tell you about a story of my hometown. Grew up in a small town called Connecticut,
I'm not sure.
Conuit Lake? Conuit Lake?
I think so.
I was going to say Connecticut Lake, but it's not Connecticut
it
Lake.
It looks kind of like Connecticut.
If there was a C in it, it would be Connecticut Lake. Uh-huh. So, Connecticut, something Lake, Pennsylvania. The population is no more than 800 people at most, and that is including some of the other surrounding villages. The town surrounds a lake that was made by glaciers millions of years ago and is supposedly the biggest glacier-made lake in Pennsylvania, resulting in many prehistoric fish still being caught to this day. On the arch of the lake overlooking the water is a hotel that was included in an 1800s attraction called Conuit Lake Park. Back in the day, it was one of the bigger attractions. People from states over would come to visit, enjoy the rides, dance in the massive ballroom where I can envision wine and champagne were served in glasses, while elegantly dressed women twirled and danced to the sound of the dusty organ that sat in the corner with the once beautiful marble floors. It isn't until it was burned down in February of 2008. which the movie The Road was filmed almost immediately after the fire, leading my small town to believe it was arson. But after these years, the Cottonwood Hotel still stands in the corner of the park. Over the years, the hotel has seen the changes of the community that surrounds it and has even seen me grown up. April 27, 1943, there was a wedding of a young couple, Elizabeth and her husband, both excited to start a new life and having their whole future ahead of them. After the marriage ceremony, they proceeded to check into their room 321 at the hotel. Still in a suit and tie, and Elizabeth in her beautiful white gown, her hair down in elegant strands, with a faint smell of jasmine emanating from her neckline. Later that night, a heavy storm with thick billowing clouds swept over the lake. Lightning strikes lit up the sky, and thunder shook the tiny houses surrounding the water as it appeared ever faster to the hotel. When the ominous clouds reached the hotel, a lightning bolt struck the roof of the hotel, igniting a fire that spread, engulfing a section of the hotel in what I assumed felt like seconds. Elizabeth's husband, on the way back to the room, was caught in the mass hysteria of people running past, trying to escape the smoke and flames, licking their heels. Assuming his bride was already outside, he went rushing out to find her and comfort her. But as he ran outside, he began his search. Little did he know that his bride was inside, still in her beautiful white dress, panicking and searching the hotel rooms, screaming his name over the sound of the flames and smoke. Becoming trapped in the hotel, Elizabeth was unable to see through the smoke, having sections of her once beautiful dress burnt, torn, and covered with ash, quickly perished in the blaze. Years later, the hotel still stands. It's watched small changes in my little hometown over the years, good and bad. Still stands. Now, the stories I'm about to tell you regarding the hotel and ballroom are of my own personal experiences over the years growing up, but I want to start with my most recent one and work my way back. Back in my senior year of high school during prom, I remember all of us dancing in the ballroom of the hotel. At the time, a previous classmate's mother owned the hotel before I assumed it was resold again. My date and I decided to leave the dance a little early. My excuse was because I wanted Taco Bell in my beautiful prom dress, but in all reality, the floor wasn't made to withstand senior and junior prom. You can literally feel the floor pitch and wave under your feet and see one side of the room higher than the other. Granted, at that age, not many of us had common sense, but personally, just because someone affiliated with the hotel said, sure, it's going to be just fine, I was not about to take their word for it. As we were walking out of my dad's, we stopped to look back at the hotel for a brief moment. On the second floor, we saw a single light lit coming from a window. I turned to my date and said, I thought they weren't authorizing any room rentals for tonight. As we both gazed up at the single lit room, he said, not moving his eyes from the window either. Maybe it's just the new hotel's owner's daughter. You know, she lets her get away with murder anyway. As soon as he said that, I shit you not, a thin female figure seemed to fade into the light, creating an outline. Thinking it was our classmate, we began to yell at the window, hey Danielle, don't be silly. Rap is Willie. Trying to be funny, but the next thing we heard sounded like a shotgun, but a large boom. Then the light from the window was gone. At first we thought maybe the floor fell through, or at least a section of it, or maybe a fuse blew. But the sound of the music and giggling continued. They weren't even a quarter mile from the hotel. I'm very sure there would have been screams, some form of panic, but nothing. Without really saying another word, we quickly went to my dad's car and left. Not really saying another word about it, just because we weren't sure what happened. And at the time, I really didn't want to freak out my date on what was supposed to be a very special night. The previous years, in ninth grade, I was elected to be on the prom committee. We helped decorate and fundraise the prom. Anyone on the committee was allowed to go to the prom as well. Not really dressed up or anything, but at the time it was cool to hang out with the older kids. So if you got elected, you a busted ass so you could go to prom. Remember one morning, we were all given written excuses stating that decorating for prom would be considered attendance for the day, which was awesome. So off we all went to the hotel to decorate. Towards the end of the day, around 3 p.m., I and another friend of mine went to go explore the hotel. We'd never been further than the wraparound porch in the ballroom, so we went exploring. We went to the creepy, unorganized cellar areas with rooms, some used as storage, open pipes under refurbished rooms that looked like they hadn't been touched since the early 1900s. with a red light peering down from the ceiling, making it look all the more ominous, especially being in the basement. Then that's when my friend and I got the bright idea of, hey, let's go find Elizabeth's room. So we began back upstairs, silently walking past the open entrance in the ballroom area and jetting upstairs, only stopping for a moment to take a picture with my state-of-the-art flip phone of the staircase. We searched and searched till we stopped dead in the tracks, staring at a door with a big metal hang with letters that read 321. A little bit of an anxiety, I looked over my friend and said, here goes nothing. We opened the door. What sat in this tiny room was a small bed and vanity. The bed had a floral comforter with a blue background, and the vanity had an old feel to it with wooden swirls encasing the large oval mirror. The wood was painted a turquoise color and had started to show its age, with flaking paint showing around the rim of the mirror. Looking at the small window, there were white drapes being pushed by the wind. Noticing the window was open, I wondered how. This room was not available for guests, and housekeeping didn't show up at all that day. I remember looking through the window, and I was able to see my old babysitter's house from the doorway. Wanting to walk in and touch the bed, maybe look out the window and see all the neighboring houses below, I had a strong feeling in my stomach that I shouldn't. As soon as I felt this strong warning subconsciously wash over me, my friend whispered in my ear, maybe we should go. Without another word, I took two steps back, quietly shutting the door, turning to my friend, and we sped walked away, both not wanting to admit we felt something, whatever it was. Later that afternoon, on the ride back to school, we decided to look at the silly pictures I took that day on my phone. I took it out, and a group of my friends began to gather around, making comments, poking fun, and just being silly teenagers. Then we got to one of the staircases. In the middle of the picture was a huge white orb hovering over the third step. My friend and I both sat there a little astonished over what we saw. To this day, I still have this picture on my old flip phone up in Pennsylvania. Just couldn't bring myself to delete it. Thanks again for reading my story. You rock, and being an EPP is probably one of the best gifts I could have ever given myself. Keep up the good work, Belle.
I wondered if when they heard that loud bang or pop when they saw the figure upstairs, if that wasn't like a residual of the lightning strike.
That's an interesting thought.
You know, like that whole few seconds is replaying.
Coming back over and over again. Do you think it can conjure up residual energy with, you know, just the thought or the talking of it, or, you know, discussing or bringing it up? Or does it come back really on its own in its own timetable?
I think residual comes back on its own because it doesn't really have an intelligence factor.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think intelligent entities may show up if you are talking about it because they're like, ooh, I heard my name.
Yeah. Look at me. I'm here. That's a good point. Interesting timing.
It is.
For all of that. I don't blame them either for deciding, hey, it's probably not the best idea to be hanging out on this ballroom dance floor when it's doing that. Have you ever seen, there's like YouTube videos, and they're horrible. I don't know if there's any from this country, but there's been some in other countries where building codes aren't as stringent as we have here, where people are dancing at a wedding. I remember this, it's years ago.
I remember that.
And all of a sudden the floor just goes, and everybody dancing is like people are like, what the hell? And then, oh shit. And I think some people were killed in that. I could be wrong. I don't know. It was taken, I don't know, it was probably like 10 years ago.
Yeah, I remember that.
It was disturbing. It was very disturbing because you're going from something happy and joyous to like utter tragedy, and it's caught on film. And you don't have to, I mean, obviously being there would be much more, I think, you know, affecting obviously emotionally. But it's one of those things you still don't forget.
Well, it's kind of like what happened in Kansas City, so.
Yeah, with the thing that fell, the balcony that fell. It's one of those things where I'm happy YouTube and camera phones were not around back then.
Oh, I know.
There'd be so many horrible videos of that. I think we have enough horrible videos out there. That's what you're searching. You know, I don't think we need any more, but inevitably more will come. Nick writes in, my name is Nick and I'm a medium. I've been living in Liverpool for most of my life, and my wife and two kids have been renting for most of our time together. We've been together for 12 years at this time, so we thought it was time to buy our own house. As weeks went by, we looked at different places. It didn't appeal to us. At this time, it's become a stalemate. So a little later on, our daughter had seen this home for sale online that she really liked. Again, we went to see this house with the ambition this would be the one. And as it was for our taste. The house was built in the 1800s, plus it was renovated, and which was nice and in our budget. This is all working out. A week or so later, we made the deal, began to move in as well. Like always, when I'm in a new place, I feel energy. So my wife, who is very spiritual, says, like always, a new place just needs to be cleansed. I began to sweet grass the house, and as I thought I saw something on my shoulder on the steps like a shadow. This was a very strong energy, and I went to investigate, and I saw and felt nothing. Some time went by, and things were normal. Then one night, I was in the kitchen, and in my home on the first floor is an open concept, and you can see from the kitchens to the stairs. All of a sudden, I get this feeling I wasn't alone. As I looked up, my eyes went to the stairs. I saw what looked like a young girl about 6 or 7 with black holes for eyes. I freaked out, ran to my wife, and then told her what I saw, and she said, it's just your imagination. I looked at her like, come on, it's my imagination? So I just blew it off. As days went by, my wife came to me. She said, when I'm sitting on the couch, I keep hearing this deep voice in my ear, and I'm wary of the window like someone is watching me. As I investigate, I feel something there, but can't pick up on what it is. I told her it was some form of energy. Don't worry, it's okay. I didn't feel it was bad. Later on in the week, I came home from work and my daughter was complaining that she had seen a little girl in her bedroom, and I thought to myself, that must be what I saw. I went up to her room and sweet grassed it and told her, there, everything's okay now. When I turned around, that little girl was standing in front of me with them same black eyes. I suddenly looked away and thought, damn it. From this point, this got really active. A couple nights later, my daughter came running down the stairs saying I was having a bath and I felt something touch my head. And I looked in the mirror and my hair was standing straight up. No sooner after that, she said that the curtain of the same window that my wife was seeing the figure in stood straight up. I was thinking, man, why can't I figure this out? As freaked out as everyone was, we all slept in the same room, which was my bedroom. Where my bed was facing, it was looking straight at the steps, and I knew there was something on the steps. So at this point, I was getting anxious, and my wife and daughter were scared, lying huddled on the bed. Luckily, my son was at the friend's house. Throughout the night, things got quiet until about 3 a.m., and the bed started shaking violently, and everyone was scared. We all yelled, stop it, and eventually it stopped. The next morning, I thought I have to do something about this. I went to an outside source, a friend of mine, who was a medium as well. I met with her and told her what was going on. She came by to investigate. She went around the house and she said there are a lot of spirits in the house. They don't want you guys here. They don't know they're dead and they think you're invading their home. So she spoke to them to let them know they don't belong here and they have to go. They resisted by slamming things around, so we formed a circle and invited their loved ones from the other side by opening up a door from the spirit world. As we showed them where to go, I saw a little girl walk into the door and looked at me with a smile. The first thing I noticed were her big blue eyes.
That's kind of a happy ending.
This freaky black-eyed child got eyes.
And got to cross over.
Yeah. That's interesting, and that's scary and bizarre and really makes you wonder why was she being projected with no eyes or black eyes? Until the point of crossing over. That's the troubling, I don't get it part of the story.
Maybe it's just a matter of sadness and happiness.
And that's how it's projected?
Well, maybe for this little girl.
Sure.
Maybe this little girl was oppressed by one of the other spirits too.
Could be. It's a very interesting story, very freaky story.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm getting like scary and freaky through the whole thing, and then they're talking about, I didn't feel it was bad. It's like random, scary little eyeless girl standing in front of you at random times that just seem to startle. I don't think I'd be, I don't know. I'm not, I guess, super great on picking up on vibes all the time. And even if there was no vibe going on, I'd be getting scary and negative just because of the circumstance.
Sure.
If that was me.
Yeah.
But I guess if you're more sensitive to those things, you have a better ability to pick up on, oh, even though this thing does look gruesome and scary as hell, it seems more like Teddy Ruxpin.
Okay.
You know, just friendly and not threatening.
Yeah.
Although, I mean, there's probably someone out there who feels very threatened and scared by Teddy Ruxpin.
I hated Teddy Ruxpin.
Okay, there we go. We found our one person.
There you go.
We saw you. Why did you hate Teddy Ruxpin?
I didn't like how he kept talking and I couldn't get it to stop. Remember, I told you I ripped
his jaw off.
I did. He still talked, and that was even worse. His little nose would keep going up and down, making that same noise. It was all of four.
We saw one at an antique store not that long ago.
Yeah, we left it too.
We should have gotten it.
No.
Did you get bad vibes from that Teddy Ruxpin?
I didn't get bad vibes from it any more than any other Teddy Ruxpin.
You just have an aversion to Teddy Ruxpin.
I just don't like them.
Maybe we'll get one in the mail someday from somebody.
Great.
Be great. See if we can like start accumulating a collection of them and like just start putting them on the walls.
That's the last thing we need is a collection of Teddy Ruxpins.
Set them up on a motion sensor so when you walk into the room, they all start talking at once. I don't know how you would rig that up, but I'm sure there's some way of doing that. That would be freaky as hell.
No.
Because you could really put anything you wanted in one, it would sing, right? I think it just emulated the audio.
I think so, but I don't know. I didn't have other cassettes when I was that little.
Okay.
I just had the Teddy Ruxpin cassette.
You could put anything from, I believe, Teddy Ruxpin to Michael Bolton to Cannibal Corpse inside of Teddy Ruxpin, and he could be doing death metal or said, I loved you, but I lied.
You could set it up like your own Rockafire explosion.
Yes, you really could. He was like a mini Rockafire explosion.
Yeah.
I wouldn't know because my mom and dad refrained from ever getting me one. Thanks, Mom and Dad. Our next story... Actually, my dad ended up getting one. I've said this before.
Yeah.
Like when I was 20 something.
But like in a display.
Yeah, he found the display at like an antique store. It had all those Teddy Ruxpin and friends. And it was at an antique store or something, and now it lives in their attic. God knows why. It probably has like mice living in its mouth. Now that would be even freakier. Teddy Ruxpin, and he opens his mouth and all of a sudden like a family of mice come running out. That's the trailer to a new horror movie.
Nightmares.
Nightmare time. Sarah writes in, hey, Tony and Jenny, it's Sarah again. You guys just read my story about the haunted grocery store and gym. Thanks for reading it and a couple of my other stories. I'm listening to your podcast as I write this, and you just talked about a Pee Wee Herman doll that said some not so nice things. But I worked at Big Lots a few years ago, and we had these creepy dolls that would say things as you walked past them. Most of them said normal things like mommy and normal dolly things. However, there was a handful that would say some really weird stuff, and they sounded like they were talking backwards and in a deep voice, and they would talk and laugh when no one was near them on our overnight shifts. There you go. It's like a lot of times stores like that, they're selling either things that were expired or close to being expired from another store.
Mm-hmm.
Aftermarket stuff that, was unsold at another store, or remotely defective products, not like harmful to your health or anything, but like mislabel or something
odd.
Just a
little off.
Yeah. Scratch and dent, mm-hmm. essentially. So it makes me wonder if some of these are like, oh, that was when we had Demonic Joe working in the sound room with the dolls. And we got rid of him, but we accidentally got 10,000 of those dolls out. Let's send him to Big Lots. Doubtful, but you never know. An update on my haunted workplace. I was cleaning the bathrooms at the gym one day, and it was our dead time. No pun intended. I had the door propped open in case a customer came in, and I was bent over cleaning the toilet when I heard something running up behind me. I quickly turned around thinking it was one of my friends from the store next door, as they like to try to scare me all the time. There's no one there. The boys that usually mess with me weren't even working that day. Then a few days later, I was working at the store and it was closing time, and one of my coworkers and I were standing at the back and we heard a very loud female voice yell for help. We both jumped because it was loud. It sounded as if the voice was in the pipes above us. There were no customers in the store, and the only other employee was in the front of the store counting money in the office. I'll continue to ride in with updates as they happen. Onto my story, which is pretty short, but this haunted bridge is located near Springfield, Illinois. And it's one of those crybaby bridges that seem to be all over the place. This one has two legends behind it. One is a typical urban legend of a school bus that went off the road. If you put the car in neutral and turn it off the bridge, then the kids will push you to safety. I don't believe in legends. I believe it's all geographical mindfucks. The land appears to be either flat or it may appear to go up a hill when in fact the land is actually slanted downward and your car begins to roll and it seems as if it's being pushed. The legend that brought my friends and I to the bridge, however, was a legend of a satanic cult where the members would sacrifice women and, most disturbingly, babies. When my friends and I arrived at the bridge, I felt very uncomfortable, more than likely because it was out in the middle of nowhere and we were surrounded by creepy old trees. The bridge itself is at least 100 years old, maybe more. We didn't have a whole lot that happened on the bridge, but more so in the woods. I saw a tall, dark shadow of a very large man watching us investigate. I felt evil, which is why I believe the cult rumors over the school bus stories. As we were investigating, I began to have a panic and anxiety that I usually feel when I come in contact with a spirit. It felt as though the man was pressing on my chest and I started to sweat. Mind you, it was a cold fall night, no reason for me to sweat. It became worse and worse the closer we got to the bridge. Once we were on the bridge, I could barely breathe and was feeling dizzy and clammy. The entire time, everywhere I looked into the woods, he was standing there. We were recording both audio and video and taking pictures the entire time and didn't catch anything until we got into our car right before the recorder was turned off. We caught a loud and creepy growl that none of us heard with our own ears. I refused to go back there, though my friends have since returned. I'm not a religious person, but I believe in good and evil, and I feel that that bridge and the land around it may have once been a setting for some very disturbing activity. That's all for now. I'll write in with more stories and possibly a story of my mom's if she'll let me tell it. Thank you both for what you do. I can't wait for the new Seeing Ghosts episode. Have a good one, Sarah, in Illinois.
I wonder what it is with bridges. You know, we have a lot of stories beyond just your classic, oh, there was a lady that threw her baby off the bridge, or she threw herself off the bridge, or whatever happened on the bridge.
Yeah.
There's a lot of stories that have something to do with that, or kids hanging out there and they hear something. I wonder why that's a haunted thing. I wonder if it has something to do with the water nearby or what.
I don't know. I mean, a lot of the stories, I think, originated a long, long time ago.
Mm-hmm.
More so when, I think youth are out, you know, exploring and, playing, for lack of a better term, you know, in their surrounding environments. So the bridge being something that stands out from the rest of the environment, whether it just be a long stretch of road and the bridge, it's like a reference point. It's a specific set area where you can say, if you're making a story up, it happened on the bridge.
Okay.
It's easier than saying, it happened about 3.5 miles down the long stretch of road with 5,000 endless trees on it, by that one tree. You know, it's harder to pinpoint that and set up a story versus the bridge.
So it's just serving a landmark?
I think it's serving a landmark in a lot of stories where they're just bullshit, but I think there's a lot of stories where, you know, it, yes, indeed, it was a landmark, but it was also a point where shit could go wrong, more so than just the other places, more so than just the long, flat stretch of land, you know, where you could have, something happen. And it probably, you know, stories, you know, sometimes probably do originate with something. You know, a lot of times, are they what the stories are portrayed to be today? No, not at all. Some may be. It's probably a very small fraction of them, though. But I think probably a lot of the urban legends begin with something tragic happening on the bridge. And it may just be as tragic and sad just as a suicide. And I don't want to say as simple as a suicide, but, you know, something of that nature, meaning sure. There's nothing else involved, meaning there's not a satanic cult or a bus or a woman or, you know, some sort of weird, fucked up circumstance that's really scary. It's a very depressed individual You know, and then that's confirmed. The town knows about it. The kids find out about it. Whispers begin. And then, did you hear about this? And then it just builds and it builds and it builds and it builds.
Okay.
Where something happens.
Sure.
And it gets way out of proportion. Yeah. That's where I think a lot of it comes down to.
Yeah.
Could be wrong, but it seems to make somewhat logical sense. There you go. 855-853-4802 is our phone number at Real Ghost Stories Online. Of course, you can write it on our website, realghoststoriesonline.com. And of course, you're hearing a lot of people talk about EPPs. That's extra podcast people. They get a bonus episode of the show every single week. Access to all of our bonus episodes, about 80 of them out there now, filled with our best stories. Access to our other exclusive, like Seeing Ghosts. They just mentioned that. That's our video episodes that we put out once a month. Jam-packed with some of the creepiest ghost photos that are sent to us here on the show. So be sure to sign up and get that. It's only $5 a month. It's what keeps the show on the air. It financially supports all of our hard costs for doing the show. And you get a lot of nice extras and an extra day to get creeped out. Colette writes in, "Hey guys, love your show. Found it during a road trip from Toronto to Nova Scotia and listened all the way. Made for an extra spooky drive. Especially like the episode of Haunted Halifax, as my boyfriend has lived there all of his life and knows all of the places. I've had many unexplained paranormal experiences growing up and would like to share one with you and your listeners. Growing up, we lived in a very old wartime house in the historic part of the Pickering Village in Ontario, Canada. The house always had an eerie feeling to it. I always felt uneasy, but had lived in the house all my life and didn't know any different until I'd visit friends at their houses and wasn't afraid as I was in my own. Strange things happened, like when my sister was a baby in the high chair in the corner of the kitchen. My mom was feeding her, and it was only the two of them in the house, and my sister looked above my mom's head, and her eyes and head were moving as if she was watching someone. Mom felt a chill and uneasy, and then the baby looked above my mom's head, waved, and said, 'Hello.' When she turned around, no one was there. Growing up, my sister would play with her imaginary friends and tell my parents that she was always seeing a man in the back in her room, or seeing a man in black in her room. They weren't sure what to make of it, but made sure all the doors and windows were locked and the house was secure. It was probably just their young child having strange dreams, but as she got older, she stopped talking about it, and the man in black made less appearances. My sister is older than me, and eventually the visits stopped, but then the visits began for me. The strange thing is, as a child, I never spoke to my older sister about this. We never talked about the shadow man until we were older and reflecting on the strange happenings of our house. When I told my parents at the age of 6 or 7 that there was a man in my room, dressed in all black, who stands in my room close to my closet and watches me sleep, this made my parents uneasy because it was unexplainable and you want to protect your children. However, it's something that you can't explain. My parents just told me that it was probably a dream. I was chatty and talkative about this man in my room, and after a sleepover at my cousin's, I told my mom that the man in black doesn't go into my cousin's house, just my house. As I got older, the man in black stopped making appearances while I slept, but I always felt uneasy in the house, especially when alone, and I would never want to fall asleep if someone else was in the house. As a teenager, I had a digital alarm clock that had the time lit up, and every night I'd wake up around 3 or 3:15, and I'd feel like there was a heavy weight on me or someone was with me in the room, even though I couldn't see it. I'd lay there awake, but too terrified to call out to my parents or sister or even call the dog because I always had this strange feeling if I called out that whatever thing was in the house or my room would get to me first. So I would just lay there until my dad would get up and get ready for work at 5 and then feel okay to fall asleep again until I got up for school. There are only a few strange things that happened in the house. I'll write back more when I have a chance. Thanks for reading. Love the show. Colette."
I couldn't imagine being so terrified. You just laid there until you heard somebody else in the house awake.
Yeah.
Like, every day.
It's, the idea of every single night and it becoming normal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, of having, you know, when someone's watching over you. I don't know. That would just be so... I don't think I could ever really get used to it, even if you know it's not threatening.
Mm-hmm.
It just did.
No.
And then to have that parallel where it's like, oh, I'll go to my friend's house, don't feel that way at all, or cousin's house, don't, you know.
Right.
Just furthermore confirming that this is not just you, you know, in something that's in your mind every night when you're going to sleep.
Yeah.
It's, in fact, something is going on in your environment. We get that a lot of siblings later in life discussing, oh, remember Mom used to make those delicious tuna casseroles? Yeah, remember the dark shadow man that used to be in our bedroom? Oh, my God, you had that too? Yeah.
It's amazing it goes from tuna casserole to shadow people.
Exactly. It's a natural transition.
Yeah.
Very dark things.
Yes.
Actually, I've come to love tuna casserole.
I hate tuna casserole.
And you hate it. Yeah. I hated it when I was a kid. I did. I did not like it. It was one of my least favorite dishes. And my mom made a lot of hot dishes.
Uh-huh.
And that was on the rotation quite frequently. Usually like right next to one that had cornflakes on top of it. But this one, it had the best part of it was the little crunchy onions, the French's onions. But I still never really liked it much. Then as an adult, I'm like, yeah, this isn't half bad.
I didn't like it as a kid, and I still don't. And I still kind of think twice before I order anything with rotini just because I have such a bad memory.
The curse of the tuna casserole.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a Goosebumps book.
Yeah.
Our next letter comes in. Hi, Tony and Jenny. My name is Wywin, and I'm from Shanghai. I just discovered your show a few weeks ago and have become really hooked on it. I don't have any paranormal experience personally, but I'd like to share the story of my friend. This happened in a Beijing subway. I'll narrate this story in the account. It was February 13th last year. I was heading to the southern train station by a subway, and I remembered it was about 8 a.m. The station was crammed with people. Line 1 was not operating. I overheard that someone had just jumped to the trail to commit suicide at Wu Ki Song, which is Five Pine Trees, another station on Line 1. I didn't want to waste any time waiting for it to reoperate and decided to just take a taxi. Just when I was about to get a taxi, Line 1 was back to work. In the rush hour in the morning, there are always tens of thousands of people in the Beijing subway. It could be one of the most crowded scenes ever seen. Anyway, I followed the crowd to the platform. Since there were no guard bars, I didn't dare to stand at the front because when the train came, people would start to push ahead. I was afraid of being pushed down to the rail. As I had a suitcase with me, there were lots of people. I didn't get in and waited for the next one. Just when the train left, I found something strange. There were a few people at the platform. I looked to the stairs. Only a few people came downstairs, and this was really inconceivable to happen in the rush hour. I managed to land myself at a seat after I embarked. When the train stopped at the next stop, more people got in. The train became crowded as usual. Screams were heard from time to time. Gradually, my doubt disappeared. At some point, I noticed a man in his 50s sitting opposite me. I couldn't help notice him because of his sandals and because it was just in the coldest month of the year. He was poorly dressed, pretty ragged, with very long hair, which seemed lacking care for a long time. I suspected him as a tramp, but I didn't smell any odor, so I looked down at my phone. Strangely, I felt him staring at me the whole time. The train became even more cramped. I thought it's impossible that he was still staring at me, so I raised my head. I found I could just see his eyes through the legs of the crowd and only eyes, just staring at me, even if I met his eyesight. The train stopped, and when the doors opened, his eyes disappeared. I stood up to look at the direction of the door, but I couldn't find the man among the people getting off. The person opposite me had changed. I freaked out a bit. As the door shut, I had never seen the man again. When the train started again and into the tunnel, I was just dwelling on how a man could just vanish. All of a sudden, I glanced, and the man was on the glass across me. Even it was just an instant, I was sure that it was the man just now, still staring at me. When I wanted to take another clearer look, there was nothing on the glass, just nothing. Later, I thought, would there also be a man staring at me from the glass behind me? Just want to share the story. Hope it's exciting enough. Thank you very much. Keep up the good work.
Okay, so the guy was there.
Mm-hmm.
And then he vanished, but when the rider looked over and saw the reflection in the glass, there was still a reflection of the guy.
Uh-huh.
Do you think it was the guy that jumped before the train took off?
I think it could be the guy that jumped or any guy that jumped or got pushed off, because that's a fairly common occurrence. Like you described there.
Yeah.
Don't want to be near the platform because of all the people. That's a common occurrence in that area, too.
Oh, wow.
And it's not, you know, nobody's like, hey, boom, let me push you. It's just sheer amount of people and crowd.
Yeah.
And I've seen crazy videos of that subway, which just, I mean, it is an amazing thing to see. It's like ants, you know, and it's so systematic. Like everybody just, they know how it works because they do it every day. But, you know, we're just, a lot of us are just so not used to seeing that many people.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times it works just fine. And it just seems to flow, you know, fairly well. And it's amazing to watch. But every once in a while, you know, somebody's, you know, there and it just, you know, there's no more place to move and somebody gets pushed off onto the rail. So
it's awful.
Yeah. But it happens.
Yeah.
So there's probably a lot of death that surround those areas and those lines where you could have that lurking spirit. Is it coincidence that, excuse me, that it happened that day where there was the report of someone dying right there? I don't know. It's hard to tell, you know, because just because there is a lot of that happens.
Mm-hmm.
But it is good timing. Could it be him? Sure.
Wow.
Could it be one of the many others? Sure. It's something.
It is something. That's really interesting to not see the guy there, but to see his reflection in the glass.
A ghost reflection is a scary idea.
It is.
I think it marks, I think it's even higher than like a mirror.
Yeah.
Because it's like, it's even translucent and it's, I don't know, it just, I don't know, something creepy about that. All right. Thank you for writing in and thank you for listening to our show. We greatly appreciate that. Samantha writes in, hi, Jenny and Tony. I want to thank you both for reading my story on your EPP episode 73. I was so excited to hear Tony read my story, and of course he did an amazing job. I wrote the story of the haunted house that my family and I lived in when I was 15 or 16. I was talking to my dad about it today, telling him all about your podcast and how I recently became an EPP member and how I've been listening to the stories nonstop. I double-checked the facts with my dad about what I wrote to you guys, and he said everything was spot on. He remembers it all. I asked him if he knew any reason why the house was haunted, because now it was bugging me since I wrote in. Turns out he knew exactly why, but he kept it from us kids because he didn't want to scare us. This is what he told me. I'm pretty sure there was a history of abuse in that family. I know at least one, if not both, of the parties died. The parents died in that house. And I think that the parents were neglected by the children. I found this out after all those times that we had dinner with the owner and just listening to him talk. How creepy is that? It's unfortunately a sad story, and the energy in the house represents that. I have a couple more paranormal experiences I'd like to share with you both and the listeners, and I'll make sure to write them in. This one has been long enough. Thank you both for everything that you do and for this great podcast. I love being an EPP. I hope both you and your family are well. Keep it creepy. P.S. New England Patriots are the shit and every other team is second. Samantha from Boston. There you go. The views expressed on this podcast are not necessarily those of the hosts. I really don't have much of a...
I don't care. I like the Packers and that's about it.
That's just because I don't really follow them until it's the end of the season.
No, Samantha's story, I had to go back and reread it. It was the one... Do you remember the discussion was... the neighbors said, did you know your house was haunted?
Mm-hmm.
Because we see lights come on and go off all the time when you're out of town.
Yeah.
That was her story.
Okay.
So it was pretty, you know, pretty detailed on the accounts of what happened.
Mm-hmm.
So I find it interesting that she went back and asked and found out, oh, yeah, they died in there.
Yeah, and then found out a little extra detail.
Yeah.
That was not necessarily discussed over the delicious tuna casseroles they were having growing up.
No kidding.
That's creepy. That's EPP 73, is that what you said? Okay, so there, if you want to check it out, go reference that episode and enjoy that one. It was a good one. I do remember that. So anyway, EPPs, check it out. If not an EPP, sign up on the website, realghoststoriesonline.com. Click Become an EPP. Bianca writes in, hey, guys, my story's pretty short. This just recently happened about a few days ago. So I have a friend from work that just recently passed away. We have no idea why, but the theory is that her crazy ex-boyfriend hurt her. They're still doing an autopsy on her body. Anyway, she didn't show up for work Friday. I called her phone to check up on her Saturday morning because I know she was going through a lot because of her ex-boyfriend. He was very abusive mentally and physically and stalked her and wouldn't leave her alone, but her husband answered the phone. She was still married while she was dating the crazy ex. She and her husband were separated. I asked if my friend was around, and he told me that she had passed away. So later that night, I fell asleep and had a dream about my friend. And in my dream, she came to me and told me that she was still alive, but she just had to move far away. And she smiled and gave me a big hug and said she would see me later. And she disappeared. I know she passed, but I don't understand why in my dream she told me she was alive. Not sure if she just came to me in my dream to tell me goodbye or to let me know that she was okay. I just want some closure. Maybe you guys can help me figure out why she came to me in my dream. That's it for now. It's not much, but I love listening to the show. I listen every day while at work, and it helps time go by, and I'm always telling my friends about the podcast. But they think I'm crazy. LOL. Not an EPP yet. Planning on becoming one soon. I'm having a baby soon, so right now every penny counts for me. I have a few other creepy dreams that I have every time I have had sleep paralysis, and also a story about my brother being possessed. That's something not everyone has. All right, more when I get the chance. Keep up the good work. Hope to hear from you guys soon.
I'm thinking that the visit was more so closure because she left so abruptly.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm sure it was a death nobody expected. Obviously, they're doing an autopsy, so
sure,
it was unexpected. But I think maybe she meant she's still alive, not in the sense that she's still breathing and has a heartbeat, but in the sense that she's still there in some form.
Mm-hmm.
And that, you know, she's okay on the other side. And maybe that was just meant to be kind of a final goodbye.
Mm-hmm.
But not necessarily, oh, I just moved. Because if she was still alive and she just left, I seriously doubt that she would have been able to, you know, show up in your dream and tell you that.
And who are they doing the autopsy on then?
Right.
I mean, this is obviously, I think it was a closure type thing.
Yeah,
That was certainly coming through. So thank you for the story and the experience. Marissa writes in, greetings, guys. I really appreciate what you're doing with the show. However, I feel the need to get answers and possibly some help to find out what happened to me. This is not a typical ghost story, but the memory of my death. I was born different. I've always been highly emotionally affected by people, places, and things. I attributed this to anxiety or being sensitive, but deep down, I don't believe that, because I was not only born able to feel others' emotions and be highly affective, I also have a memory that's not mine. There's this car accident I remember, and mind you, I've asked my mother, I was never in or around any accidents as a child, and no one recalls this memory. I remember lying on the ground, and it was late at night, and it was very dark out. I remember seeing the car lay out around a bend in the road, and the passenger door was open. I remember the car was black with white hubcaps, and it seemed I wasn't in the present. There were people scurrying around the car, and I could see them in the headlights as my vision gets blurry and then gets dark. And that's all the memory I have. For some reason, that memory has always stuck with me, and I've looked for answers everywhere, and I cannot find any. I grew up with a deep fear of car accidents and didn't start driving until this year. I'm 24 years old. I also feel that someone I really cared for was in that accident. I've always felt lucky to be here, and I can't help but think this was not my first time here. I've also been described as classic in my looks, and I don't fit into any specific time. I hope this reaches you guys, and I hope someone else out there understands what I'm carrying with me, and I also think whatever happened to me caused me to be an empath. Thanks, guys, for your time, and if you could help me with this, I would greatly appreciate it.
I think it's a memory of a past death.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't know why that would be the only memory that's around, but I don't know.
I don't know. It's an interesting thing, you know. And I don't know, the only thing I can, like, reference, you know, when it comes to things like that where it's past life, you know, in that area,
mm-hmm,
of that topic, you know, instinctual things that we have in us that are actually developed generation to generation over time. You know, it makes you wonder, you know, is that something that, you know, is passed down, you know, I mean, obviously genetically, but is it something, you know, not necessarily memories that come back to us, but instinctual things are almost like memory. It's almost like, no, this is how you do this, or this is how I should react when this happens. Mm-hmm. Fight or flight, things of that nature. Obviously, intuned into us over many a years. It makes you wonder, though, if something very tragic, very significant happened, to an individual, and then, they die.
Mm-hmm.
And then if it is, in fact, reincarnation, and then they're born again, you know, could that be along those lines of instinctual things, where it's such a big imprint, such a deep scar, if you will, that one is sticking too, as well as other, you know, instinctual skills that humans have.
Sure.
So, I don't know. I could be completely off on that.
The other thought I had was, I wonder if anybody in her past family history died in a car accident. Because mm-hmm. we've had listeners write in being born with memories of things that happened before they were born.
To family members.
Yes.
Yeah, like genetic bloodline. How did that memory get to this person? They were never there.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was almost getting at. You said it much more eloquently and concisely.
Sorry.
It's a tuna casserole getting to me.
Okay.
Clogs up your memory.
Yeah.
And your speech. So the tuna. I wonder if that has something to do with that.
Okay.
So very interesting story. Thank you for sharing that experience with us here at Real Ghost Stories Online. That wraps up today's episode of Real Ghost Stories Online. If you like the show and you want some bonus episodes for the weekend, well, hey, become an EPP. Sign up on the website, realghoststoriesonline.com. Click Become an EPP. You'll get all of those bonus episodes, about 80 of them out there now, all the bonus video. You can binge away throughout the entire weekend until, like, the next episode is released, and you still will have more episodes. There's that much out there to enjoy. So check it out, realghoststoriesonline.com. Click Become an EPP. And keep in mind, that's what keeps this show alive. Without our EPPs, it could not continue on. So you want this thing to continue, sign up and help us continue to do this thing called Real Ghost Stories Online. Until next time, for Jenny Brewski, I'm Tony Brewski. Thanks for listening to another episode of Real Ghost Stories Online.